Welcome to Disruptive Successor, a show for next generation leaders in family businesses and entrepreneurs who want to disrupt the status quo and take their existing business to a whole new level. We all know that what got us here isn't going to get us there. This show will provide inspiration, advice, and resources to help you create massive impact.
This podcast is sponsored by myself, Jonathan Goldhill, and my company, The Goldhill Group, where we provide coaching for growing companies. I'm Jonathan Goldhill, and my purpose is simple: to guide entrepreneurial leaders in family businesses towards more freedom and fulfillment. I want entrepreneurs to get clarity around the changes that will make them and their businesses more successful so they can experience the same freedom I've enjoyed in my life. Our proven practices challenge business owners to think differently about their business and how they're running it, and quite literally become game changers in our clients' companies. Learn more at thegoldhillgroup.com website, where you can schedule your free strategy session. Hi, it's Jonathan Goldhill, and welcome back to another episode of the Disruptive Successor Show. And today on the show, I have a client of mine that I've been working with for some time, who's based in Santa Fe and Taos, New Mexico. Hillary McPartland has been in the roofing business since she was a child. As soon as she turned 18, she spent her summer breaks on the roof as a laborer. After college, she worked in the New Mexico public schools as an educator and administrator. In 2009, she earned a Master of Arts degree in leadership, which has helped her be a better CEO in her dad's roofing company, which she joined in 2019. Hillary is well known as a champion for women in roofing and is passionate about professionalizing the roofing industry. That is, finding workers, better, smarter, safer ways to roof, moving to alternative materials, and greening up roofing. Succession is always the greatest hurdle for any family business, and that's what we're going to talk about as I welcome you. Hillary, thanks for joining me today.
Thanks for having me.
All right. So why don't we start off by telling us a little bit about your dad and the family business and how it came to be?
We're Irish, and a lot of the Irish were in roofing, whether they wanted to or not, just doing their own homes. And I think that that kind of came along with my grandfather, who started McPartland Roofing. He accidentally got into roofing. He was an accountant and did his job too well, had extra time, and was working for a roofing company at the time, and jumped on the roof, learned the trade, passed it on to my father and uncle, who then passed it on to myself and a lot of other family members.
Okay.
So I'm third generation in the U.S.
Third generation in the business.
Correct.
Wow. Okay. So it's really, when was the business started and what year?
The current, like in New Mexico, we were started in 1982.
Okay. Gotcha. Mm-hmm. So you grew up seeing the business, I know you joined when you were 18 doing summer breaks, but what was it like as a, were you?
Well, I wasn't about the typical girl, or a girl stereotype kid. I never wanted to be inside or doing any of the office stuff or babysitting jobs. So I would, do whatever I could to be at the office. And really, we had like a big yard, a warehouse, and I would go out and organize the tools or clean things up and, probably get into a lot of trouble as an 8-year-old.
Yeah.
Climbing ladders and stuff and playing with tools. But I'd help out wherever I could, all from middle school, high school, getting on the roof whenever I was allowed. And yeah, that's how I got into being a laborer.
Yeah. So very interesting. I'm sure that took you away from other things. I know you're passionate about hiking and kayaking and skiing, and so you've got great outdoor sports there. So
I always found time for both.
Yeah. All right. Great. All right. So you joined the family business in 2019. 17. Sorry.
Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about the story that led up to that. Like when, why, how did you come to join the family business?
Right. It's kind of like a big turnaround to go from education into roofing, even though there's a lot of similarities. But, you know, I'd been in the schools for 17 years and it was time for a break. And I had my sabbatical and was going to take a year off. My dad was getting ready to retire. And so it just seemed like the perfect time. So I thought I'd take a year off, come in and work on systems thinking and organizing the business to get him, you know, out of running things and see how that transition could play out. Never thinking I'd be the one who it would transition to.
Right.
So.
Well, and so you really were a leader in the field of education, administration, mm-hmm. and spent a lot of years in that field. Like, what's different about leadership in the private sector versus the maybe quasi-public sector where you were?
Not much. You know, business is business, whether it's a school or not, nonprofit. Really, it just comes down to the money, like how and where you can spend your money. Mm-hmm. In the private sector, of course, we have to make those decisions, where in the public sector, you're kind of more bound to where the money goes. And that's the biggest difference. You know, I find that working with students, working with teachers, I was a trainer of teachers, the people are people and they all have the same quirks and you kind of just have to help them along. So business is still the same.
Yeah. So they're motivated by the same things for the most part, would you say? Or, you know,
I would say so. I mean, okay. there's that intrinsic motivation, right? So, mm-hmm. you know, one of the things that I studied as an educator was punishment by rewards. You know, at a certain point, if you're just motivating with whether it's an A or a dollar, like at some point you hit a ceiling and you're not going to be motivated by that anymore. So there has to be something else. And I, you know, not getting into the weeds of that, but like, one of the biggest things that I worked on was a leadership program. And it was empowering high school students to figure out their own personal motivations. And that, I think, has really changed the way I look at things, whether it's in school, business, or my personal life.
Yeah. So I know you're interested in sports. So let's just talk a little bit about leadership in these different venues, if we will, a little bit more, because like leadership of high school students versus leadership of people in paid jobs and administration, comparing that to roofers and managers in a roofing business. It's almost like sports where you're, you know, the college coach versus the professional sports coach. I mean, it seems like college players are a little bit more motivated intrinsically just to be there. And mm-hmm. it seems like pros might be more difficult to coach, but like it's a paid job. And so have you found some distinctions like that we should be thinking about in terms of like leading different types of people?
Yeah. I mean, it's that culture, right? So mm-hmm. it's creating the culture and figuring out what motivates each individual. On the sports reference, Hunter Pence, I think that the San Francisco Giants would have never really accomplished what they accomplished with those three, you know, 2010, 12, and 14 World Series championships without the teamwork and camaraderie. It wasn't about my individual, you know, contribution to the team. It was about how we help each other. And I think that finding those niches, right? Like who are the right people? What do they bring to the table? And how do we motivate and bring them up versus, you know, letting them flail, because realistically, everybody has something of value to bring. And some of my best employees and students who I found like totally changed their lives, same thing. It was like, once we found that thing that really brought their motivation to the higher level, they all of a sudden were like, oh, wait, I can do this, you know? And that's just so exciting to see somebody really thrive. And, you know, as a coach, you get it. Yep. You're coaching, you see somebody start to thrive and it's like, wow, okay, this is where we go. And we can get to that championship level.
So at some point you probably came to recognize that your dad's way of leading and your way of leading were a bit different, I imagine.
Absolutely. You know, I've spent in my master's program, I spent a lot of time studying different forms of leadership, and some work for certain people. I'm sure that I could force myself to be a dictator. I'm not. He was a little bit more of that, although he's a definite people person. And so his dictatorship still worked in that relationship value. I'm more of like a systems thinking, higher horizontal leader. I want everybody to be contributing and, you know, in a cyclical way where we're feeding in other groups and we're kind of coming back around. So people have opportunity to move. They can learn things. There's options, whereas it's not my way is the highway. So that's kind of a little bit older way of thinking, I'd say, or a more traditional way of thinking.
I think so. You know, I think leadership has changed quite a bit. And so yeah. Your dad's thinking is a little bit more what I call old school.
Yeah.
So it's not as yours sounds more consensus and more open style of leadership.
I went to a Quaker-based, it wasn't Quaker when I was there, but it was a Quaker-based university for my undergrad. Mm-hmm. And I think that a lot of those takeaways resonated with me, you know, whether it was the social justice or rights and valuing people, that definitely made me, I think, change the way I look at how I react to people.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that has definitely shaped my leadership as well.
Gotcha. Were there any other things that have shaped your leadership? Any maybe business books, TEDx talks, podcasts, or anything?
Too many to probably share. Okay. But like,
yeah.
But, you know, Peter Senge is definitely like the highest on my list, more educational leadership. But, and Leonard Pelser, Caring Enough to Lead, like those really changed. I think they were like the light bulb for me in leadership. But more recently, you know, I've gotten back into more business related specific. Your book was great. I loved your book because it really spoke to family business.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt like everything that I read was what I was going through, mm-hmm. you know, and like, if I'll go back and I'll be like, oh God, yeah, things have changed, or I have to really remember what my purpose is and to walk through the door and remember that I'm in a business and I'm not walking into my house. Like, family is family, but business is business. And you got to remember that it's not always the same. Like we're not at home and it can't consume you, although it does.
Right.
You can't fight it.
So at some point in time, you decided to hire consultants, me as your coach, a financial consultant. What motivated you to make those choices to bring outside help in? Do you recall?
Yeah. You know, a lot of different conferences. I don't know exactly the specific moment, but a lot of different conferences, like smaller best of success with roofing contractor, you get to meet smaller amounts of people in the industry and people who have really upped their game. And I remember talking to people about different like business coaches. And I remember like, you know, as a trainer, that's what I was hired to do. I was hired to come into schools and help train their administration or their teachers or their students, whatever it was, to up their game. And so I started looking into different coaches and recommendations that I got from people. And I actually went through, I think, two coaches before you. Mm-hmm. And when we kind of dynamically got introduced, it was like, wait a second, what's different about you? And I definitely, you know, see the difference when you can actually like connect with a coach, versus just kind of going through like a cookie cutter system.
Yeah. I think that's really true. I think that I'm not for everybody, but I think that the people I connect with, it's a really deep connection. I think of my clients as, you know, most of them are family businesses and they're people who would invite me into their homes to have dinner, or break bread, stay with them, you know, do something together with them. So, you know, I've certainly enjoyed our relationship, but we're not going to
Looking forward to skiing together at some point here.
Heck yeah, exactly. I had a dream about the other night. I was like, wait, should I bring skis or snowboard? Like, yeah. You know, which one is it okay if I do both? So anyway, but
I think that, you know, if everybody can answer like who their favorite teacher was or a teacher who really made a difference in their life.
Yeah.
And I think that, whether it's, you know, a classroom teacher or a sports coach, or a family member, or just a mentor out, you know, a religious guide, somebody has impacted your life. And it's the same kind of thing, you know, when you have that team. I see even in my own business, you know, a field crew can be led by one person and the people on his crew will like do whatever he says. But some of those people go to a different crew and they're like, roofing's not for me.
Yeah.
So it's not always about what you're doing, but who's leading.
100%. You know, it's so important that we find ourselves. It's so important that we look for people who can be teachers, mentors, leaders, crew leaders, people that we respect. It makes all the difference in our lives, in our careers. Not so easy when they're assigned, if they're a field person and they're assigned to a crew leader that they don't really admire. And I know that as a, you know, in family business, I see this too often where, especially in the construction field, where someone like yourself comes into a family business and inherits crew leaders and crew members that, you know, are, you know, they wouldn't be your first choice and maybe not even your second choice. So, you know, was there things that you've learned about the differences in the way your dad managed or that you're still learning and that you manage? And, you know, like, what could you tell others who are going through this of having to deal with people they've inherited on their team, whether they're, you know, a family successor or just anyone? Like, what are some of the things that they can do to manage and maneuver through that, you know, inheriting a team that is less than ideal? Do you have any thoughts to share?
I have a cousin who also is in the industry and runs his own business and took it over from his parents. He told me when he was taking over that he couldn't do anything. He was bound until he completely replaced every single employee.
Yep.
I haven't gotten to that point. We've had, you know, people who have been around for a really long time and, they still have a lot of value. I think the one big issue is loyalty, and their loyalty might still lie with my dad. 'Cause you know, I might have inherited this, but it wasn't also something that I didn't just step into for no reason, right? Like I did that work maybe not in the same industry. But I rose through the ranks and to get into that leadership level. And I know that is not always seen the same way, but I definitely have had to earn that respect with people walking in, you know, because they do see me as like the daughter who kind of just came in. Where is she coming from? Right. Whereas I've been here the whole time. She was here before, she left, now she's back. However, I also have seen that they come to me and they talk to me and they get it now. Whereas that entitlement of I've been here and she's been gone, so I deserve it. The more they have kind of learned it, what the leadership role or like what that takes, I think the less they want it. So it's not easy, you know, to be in charge.
So what about, it's already what?
It's not easy to be in charge.
No. And so did you, when you were moving into taking over the business and really running it, did you bring a different strategy to the table that you are aware of? And what was some of the thinking that went into bringing a different strategy than your father was running with?
So, you know, I think also pretty old school, not super old, but Malcolm Baldrige, you know, his systems thinking approach was something that I learned early in my education career. A lot of it, I was like, that's business, doesn't apply. But I've always kind of kept it in my head. And when I came back in, and systems thinking, of course, has just been my thing. So I really grasp it. I get it. I feel like having boundaries makes a lot of people thrive. I personally thrive having those boundaries. So creating systems, creating standard operating procedures, creating policies, you know, setting this is the way we do things is something that is often lacking in a family business, especially I've learned this now working with other women in roofing, because we kind of commiserate, but we'll talk about, you know, like if they're working for their family business when they started, maybe there was no system or there still is no system. Mm-hmm. And that is, you know, the default because mom did this, dad did this or whatever, the son, daughter, any family member kind of just jumps in. This is the way we do things. And it's always a negotiation and nothing's on paper, which still drives me crazy. I'm still battling. You know, even an hour ago was working on the same thing. It was like somebody coming in and being like, oh, you know, we want to change this. And I said, no, we have a policy for a reason. But then I started looking into the policy that I thought was on paper and it's not in paper. You know, it's just the way we've done things for so long. Like, how did we miss that? So there's just, there's over 40 years of things to keep getting more organized and always so, doing better.
So it's interesting as I'm listening to you and I'm thinking like some listeners might be saying, well, is that strategy? And like, how is that strategy? And I have to say that I think for your business, for the size and stage where you're at, tell people how many employees do you have in the company?
We fluctuate, but I think currently we're at 33, but we fluctuate between seasons up to like 45.
Okay. So, but at that size, 30 to 50 under employees. 50. Mm-hmm. Yeah. What the strategy looks like maybe becoming like strategic thinking, which is like organizing, having systems, having processes so that multiple different people can do the same task so that something can be handed over to someone else. It isn't necessarily something more grandiose or more abstract about your market and your positioning and how you're going to be differentiating yourself in the market.
It's almost like we're in Little League and we're trying to learn the rules of the game, you know?
Yeah.
And I've got a bunch of players who aren't in Little League anymore, you know, but they're outgrowing their uniforms and they still don't know a lot of the rules.
I think that's a good analogy. So now you've taken a really active role in your industry, particularly with women in roofing, and you've gotten involved in the National Roofing Contractors Association. You're involved in Women in Roofing organization. Talk to us a little bit about the importance of participating in your associations and what you have gotten out of it. And also, what's it like to be a woman in the roofing industry and why it's so powerful to be part of a network like that. So if you can wrap some of those questions into, you know, let's talk about that.
But I have to kind of give kudos to National Women in Roofing. I think that, honestly, I don't think I would be in this position if it wasn't for National Women in Roofing. Being part of that organization, starting the New Mexico chapter, if I didn't have that, I don't think I would have stuck with roofing. But from day one, so February of 2017, when I was still in the schools, I was trying to help one of my dad's employees with networking and speaking and kind of just being more comfortable. And I went to the International Roofing Expo, and I went, there was a reception with National Women in Roofing, and I heard somebody speak, and they were talking about, you know, the industry and how things were, and there was still only 1% of women in roofing, you know, 9% in construction and 1% in roofing. And I was like, wait a second, that's how it was when I was, you know, in college. Like, nothing's changed. I'm walking around the expo and like, it's a bunch of gray old white guys. And I'm like, wait a second, where's the diversity? Like, this is not representative. So that kind of, you know, challenge is like, wait a second, I want to be the 1%. I'd love to be the 1% who makes all the money, but at least now I'm the 1% of women in roofing, and we are changing. I think the last 5 years, having that network and allowing women to feel connected and feel like they are part of the change attracts women to being in this industry. You don't have to be, you know, dirty on the roof, which, you know, is my favorite part of roofing, but I'd rather be on the roof than in the office, but that's okay. Some women, you know, just are a part of the office and part of that change. Some women are great saleswomen. And I think that having to be able to talk to somebody else, especially because it is so hard to be in this industry. You know, you asked me like, what is it like to be a woman in roofing? And it's not easy. You got to make sure that you have a seat at the table. And if you don't, you need to get a chair and bring it over.
That's great.
And
is there a diversity, equity, inclusion, like initiative or movement going on in the industry that is making some of, like, is pushing some of the old guard, you know, male, white, whatever that establishment is, that's pushing them to be more inclusionary?
Yeah, I mean, the change with National Women in Roofing, I think that NRCA values it, Western States, like all the major organizations that I'm affiliated with have really taken on. And many of our manufacturers are like, oh, you're part of National Women in Roofing? Yes. Like, we'll sponsor you. Or, you know, Tremco's jumped in and ABC Supply, Johns Manville, GAF, like all the big names are sponsoring, you know, have become big sponsors. We were the first, because my dad really felt this too. We were the first company in New Mexico to sponsor National Women in Roofing locally, our New Mexico chapter. But, you know, through that, I've seen a huge shift in the women, not only who are coming into the industry, but women rising up in CEO positions, president, ownership. The change in even the past 4.5, 5 years is drastic. You know, you see a lot more women at these conferences and calls. And I think a lot of that is due to the shift in within the country, but also those people backing and supporting and saying, yes, it's good. And not just women, but people of color, you know, Latino owned companies. I know a woman in Texas who is a Latina roofing owner, contractor owner. Like I met her and I was like, yeah, you're on the roof and yeah, and you own the business. So I love it. I think that we need to see more of that. Cause it's a diverse country and we represent more than half of the women represent more than half of it. So we should be part of the industry.
I applaud you for that. I think it's great. Do you think women are changing the industry? Maybe beyond just the face of the industry, but also changing the way the business is done or how it's perceived or, you know, how some of the other people in the industry operate.
I don't want to, you know, say that we're, you know, the females are changing it and taking credit for it. However, I see that with the diversity, it is changing. And so I do want to say that whether it's increased numbers of different ethnicities or empowering people who haven't necessarily been in those powerful roles, it is becoming more inclusive, more accepting. Also, people just talk to each other a little bit better. You know, the old school, like construction thing still happens where they're whistling at the woman walking by or whatever it is. But, you know, we're a lot more inclusive. We have like LGBTQ, you know, everything. And, we have women and, people with disabilities, and it's a lot different than it was in even the 90s or 80s.
Okay. That's great. Well, let's get back to talking about your family and your family business and, you know, the succession transition experience where it's sort of a slow handoff. So have you had to have difficult conversations with your father? Like what advice would you give to others who've had to go through that?
Well, any kid's had a difficult conversation probably with a parent. However, when you're in a family business, it's a lot more complex. I think writing things down has been a big, big thing. You working with you as a coach and having somebody to relay with, you know, that there's that CEO owner relationship as well that puts another level to it where we have to establish boundaries and say, hey, we're not having a father-daughter conversation right now. Mm-hmm. Like this is a business conversation. Let's have a business conversation.
Right.
And to make it very clear, like we are talking about something difficult and I need you to listen, not solve my problems.
That's right? Good.
Because dads want to fix things. They want to take care of you.
Yep.
And sometimes, you know, in this situation, roles are reversed because he's retiring and I have to take care of him too.
Right. And so any advice you'd give to a next generation leader, whether they be a disruptive successor or not, who's feeling resistance from their mother or father in letting go? And that might be letting go of equity. That might be letting go of control. That might be letting go of, well, that was my hire. My employee, I hired him. He was a good worker for 20 years. I mean, what advice might you give someone?
So through NWIR, I met a woman who is in my similar position, and she and I used to commiserate weekly. it was almost like we were telling each other the same thing back and forth, like, don't let your dad steamroll you, you know, like he's not just your dad. I'd say the best advice I could say is like, stand your ground. You know, if you're going to be the next generation, you have to be able to take over at some point. And if you don't take the reins, then you're going to be out of control.
Yeah. Great.
I have to remind myself of that all the time.
Yeah. So did you have any idea you would be in the position of running this company 10 years ago?
No. I don't think you could have convinced me that of, you know, I thought about it for sure when I was younger. I didn't go into education thinking I was going into education, kind of fell into my lap. But I really loved it. And, you know, this may have somewhat fallen into my lap as well, but, I've definitely taken it and have also, you know, fallen back in love with a lot of parts of the industry that I want to change and be part of the change.
That's great. So if you were advising your younger self, I don't know, maybe 5 years ago, maybe 10, what might you tell that person?
Ski more. I don't know. Play more. Enjoy, fun.
Enjoy life. Yeah.
Yeah. You know what I mean? It's like, I listened to, work-life balance, and, one of those big takeaways is that it really shouldn't be work-life balance, right? It should be life.
Work
like you shouldn't be balancing work and life. Yeah. You should be enjoying what you do. And
exactly.
I want to just enjoy what I do and not feel like I spent my whole life working and that finding that depressing.
Well, I think that's good. I used to begin all of my workshops with a quote from BC Forbes, and it said, "The business of living is living, not business."
Right.
And so I think that as we think about, you know, our visions for our lives and our businesses, we should start with a vision for our life first. Because if we create this giant vision for our business, we will crowd out any kind of vision we might have for our life. And our businesses should support our lives, not the other way around.
So. Well, there are a lot of things that make me happy that, you know, are outside of work specifically. However, I also find that there are a lot of things outside of, like, my work. You know, I say work, but it's all work, whether I'm out at home or not. But I find that I can bring a lot of them together. Like, I can bring in my education background into the roofing industry. I can bring my dog to work. I can, I've actually sold a ton of jobs, like roofing jobs, on the chairlift. So it's not like I have to keep them separate and be at one place doing one thing. I can find ways to make them work together.
That's great.
Yes. Hey, I used to sell more jobs on the chairlift than I think guys were selling on the golf course.
Yeah. Well, that's great. You know, if you can do that, because it seems skiing is something you do with someone, same with golf, but don't play tennis against them. You lose if you win and you lose if you lose. It's not a good sport to do for business. So, hey, it's been great having you share some of your experience and your story. And is there anything else you'd like to share before we sign off?
You know, if just for anybody who's in the industry or interested in the industry, or not even interested, but maybe just wants a career change, I highly recommend. I just hired a former teacher to be my office manager. And I think I want to hire a ton of teachers, like people who are looking for a career change. This is a great industry. And we need more organized, resilient people that have never thought about being in roofing. You know, it's really fun and there's great connections and it's changing. We're becoming like more professional. It's not chucking a truck anymore. There's a lot of opportunity to move up and go with like landscaping on top of a roof. You know, you can join in changing the way we look at things, whether it's solar or gardening or, you know, creating different spaces. It's changing the way we look at everything from your building to the interior to the exterior to how you want to live your life.
It's great. So if you want to move to Santa Fe, New Mexico, and you enjoy skiing or Taos, and you want to get into an outdoor industry like the roofing industry, give Hillary a call. Hillary, thanks so much for being on the show today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
All right. Fun. Another episode in the can, Disruptive Successor Show. Thank you very much for listening. This podcast is sponsored by myself, Jonathan Goldhill, and my company, the Goldhill Group, where we provide coaching for growing companies. I'm Jonathan Goldhill, and my purpose is simple: to guide entrepreneurial leaders in family businesses towards more freedom and fulfillment. I want entrepreneurs to get clarity around the changes that will make them and their businesses more successful so they can experience the same freedom I've enjoyed in my life. Our proven practices challenge business owners to think differently about their business and how they're running it, and quite literally become game changers in our clients' companies. Learn more at thegoldhillgroup.com website, where you can schedule your free strategy session. Thank you for joining us on the Disruptive Successor Podcast. If you enjoyed today's episode, please subscribe, review, and share with a friend who would benefit from the message. If you're interested in picking up a copy of my book, Disruptive Successor, go to disruptivesuccessor.com.